This is an AMI podcast.
Are you ready?
Let's go.
From AMI Central.
Now circling in the neutral zone.
Here's the pitch on the way. 36 yards for the win.
This.
Here comes a big chance. The shot.
Is this the dagger? The neutral zone.
Home run.
Good. This is as good as it gets.
Now, here's your host, two-time Paralympian, Brock Richardson.
What's going on? It's time for another edition of the Neutral Zone. I am indeed your host, Brock Richardson, and got to take care of some housekeeping. First of all, one of my dear friends, attendance, big supporter of AMI Audio, it is her birthday today, and she is probably crawling in her chair as I start to speak this, because she really would rather that I not wish her a happy birthday over the air, but I'm going to do it anyways, because I'm a rebel, and I enjoy being a rebel. So, happy birthday to Catherine Batcher, who's been on this program, on Kelly & Company, on Ramia's book podcast. She's been all over the network. So, happy birthday to the one, the only, Catherine Batcher. Appreciate everything you do for this network and me personally. Secondly, today marks our longtime technical producer, Matt Agnew, last day with us on the program. We still have one show next week, but Jeff Ryman will be alongside for that. So we'll be giving Matt some kudos in a bit later on in the program, but happy to have him along. It's been a good ride with Matt, and we'll chat more about that later on in the program. Joining me right now is Josh Watson. Josh, how are you?
I'm doing well, Brock. It is an interesting kind of weather day. It's maybe going to storm here. I'm not quite sure. So we'll hope for the best and hope it holds off. But it's going to be a busy weekend. And yeah, I didn't realize it was Catherine's birthday today. So happy birthday, Catherine. Very, very well-deserved happy birthday, I think. And looking forward to a great show and talking some sports.
Yes, I always look forward to talking sports. She'll tell you that she's 25, and I won't go into detail as to why. But if yes, that is what she will tell you. And so she is 25 and holding today, as she likes
Fantastic.
To say. As we do at this time, let's get into this week's headlines.
Ave Muirhead, the great British curler, is retiring at the age of 32. The winner of three European championships, won a world championship and a gold medal. It was a bit shocking to see the announcement of Eve's retirement. Hopefully she has many good things in store. She did reference some golf clubs, which makes me wonder if maybe she's planning a new career in the golf world, but we'll have to see.
In a suspension not seen in a very long time, Major League Baseball, a star is going to be out for a long time due to performance-enhancing drugs. Let's take a listen to this clip.
80 games. That is a suspension for San Diego Padres shortstop Fernando Tatis Jr. after testing positive for a performance-enhancing substance, according to Major League Baseball. He's out of the game immediately. The 23-year-old has been on the injured list and was due to return later this month. He's been a star since arriving in the league in 2019 and is in a 14-year, $340 million deal. The Padres releasing a statement saying they are surprised and disappointed. Alex Stone, ABC News.
The fact of the matter is there's no good way around a story like this. As a young athlete, I will give him kudos. He acknowledged that it was a mistake. But with that being said, you still need to take ownership for the actions and the things you put in your body. So it's unfortunate to see that this 80-game suspension has come down on Tatis, but that's just the way that it's designed, as this is the maximum amount of games you can be suspended with this offense made. So we wish him all the best, and hopefully he comes back learning his lesson and comes back better than ever.
The United States women's national hockey team, which will feature 18 returning Olympians, took to the ice for the first time Sunday to prepare for the World Championships without new coach John Wroblewski, who tested positive for COVID-19. Wroblewski tested positive last Saturday, USA Hockey spokeswoman Melissa Katz said, and will coach remotely while spending a 10-day stretch in self-isolation. Should he be cleared, Wroblewski would travel separately to join the team in Denmark, where the U.S. opens the 10-nation tournament against Japan on August 25th. The COVID news is unfortunate, but I'll look at the positive side. I got a great look at the overall picture this week, and now I get to remove myself and process it while still making team decisions, Wroblewski wrote in a text to the Associated Press. I'm not quite sure how you effectively coach while in isolation, but if there's one team that can probably handle it, I think it's the Americans. We all know the state of women's hockey and know that most of the time the final rounds come down to Canada versus the United States. So if this does anything to help Canada maybe go past the Americans, I guess it's a good thing. And certainly saying that, I do wish Mr. Wroblewski all the best in his recovery and hope that he is able to get back behind the bench in enough time to be effective.
Those are your headlines for this week. Let's check in on our Twitter poll questions. Last week's question was, how will the Canadian team do at the 2022 World Junior Hockey Championships? 55% of you said gold, 36% said silver, 9% said no medal at all, nobody said bronze. This week's question is, will you be watching the Women's World Hockey Championships, which is set to begin on August 25th? Your answers are quite simple, yes or no. Coming up next on the program, we're going to speak to Brianna Hennessy, who is a para canoe and kayaker. Stay tuned for that conversation next on The Neutral Zone. We'll be right back.
All right, everybody, huddle up. There are 5 ways to get in touch with The Neutral Zone on Twitter. Number 1, at AMI Audio. Number 2, at Neutral Zone BR. Number 3, at Neutral Zone CB. Number 4, at Neutral Zone Cam J. And number 5, at J Watson 200. Now get out there and tweet one for the Giffer.
Welcome back to this wonderful program we call The Neutral Zone, heard Fridays between 4 and 5 p.m. Eastern Time. I'm alongside Josh Watson. Also joining us now is Cam Jenkins. Cameron, how are you?
I'm doing good. I got lost in the Neutral Zone there for a couple of minutes, so sorry about that. And back and ready to talk sports.
Love it. Well, you've come back at a good time. We are joined by Brianna Hennessy, who grew up in Ottawa, Ontario. And after a street accident, over time, she began to take up para sports, including wheelchair rugby, para canoe, and kayak. She recently competed at the World Championships in both para canoe and kayak, and she joins us now to talk all about it. Brianna, I am so happy to have you on the program. Thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to doing this.
Thank you for having me.
Now, you've had a long journey towards the world of parasports. I wonder if you could just expand a little bit up on the intro that we gave you here.
But from before my accident, or do you want since my accident?
Maybe a little bit of both.
Okay, sure. So I grew up as an elite athlete. So I actually played AA ice hockey. I played ball hockey up to the national level. I was also a provincial champion for Ontario for boxing. So I was a fighter champion. And I also played able-bodied rugby for our province, Ontario, Quebec as well, and for Team Canada as well before my accident. So I grew up with sports being sort of the biggest part of my identity in my life. You know, when I had my car accident, you know, I thought that was all torn away from me. So, parasport for me, when people ask me sort of what does it mean for me? You know, I honestly wouldn't be here without it. It's given me my purpose back into my life. So, yeah.
And as I understand, there's actually a YouTube video out there, and it's talking about your journey to Paris in 2024. And in that video, you talk about your father saying something very significant to you on your road to recovery. Can you maybe tell us a little bit about that?
I'll get choked up maybe a little bit when I talk about this, but my last name is Hennessy, so we come from an Irish background. You know, the fight of the Irish running thickly through our blood or in our veins. And I remember it at the time when I had my accident and I was still in the hospital. At first, I couldn't even move anything from my neck down. And I remember my father being by my side and holding my arm, even though I couldn't feel it then, and I can't feel my arms or legs now. But and just looking at me in the eyes and you know, telling me not to give up, because he could just tell that I was losing hope in having a reason to live. And you know, I remember his fiery Irish eyes looking at me in the hospital bed and just saying, you know, don't you dare give up on me. And you know, I had to make a choice that I was worth it. I had to make a choice. You know, I remember having the nurses write on my hospital wall that you only know, you know, how strong you are when you have no other choice. And that kind of resonated with me. And I've carried that with me every step of the way of trying to fight and show some resilience through my adversity or my ongoing recovery. So, yeah.
In that same video, you do mention a phrase to do with dancing in the rain. And I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about that as well.
Yes. So,
we're hitting you hard today.
No worries. So, you know, since my accident, since I've taken on parasport, you know, I've really tried to tag the line of, you know, finding strength through your struggles. And sometimes you can find opportunities when you change your perspective and you just take a different look inward on things. And so for me, you know, realizing that I would forever have disabilities and accepting that, it takes a long time. Everyone goes through that very sort of dark, depression state in the first couple of years after their accidents. And, you know, when I'm trying to inspire others to start parasport or to just start a different passion in their life, you know, sometimes we're always just waiting for the trauma to end. And there's always sort of a part of that's going to be with us and that we're always fighting to sort of get part of ourselves back. So for me, my biggest motto is, you know, when there's a storm, don't wait for it to pass. Just learn how to dance in the rain. And it kind of signifies for me or symbolizes that, you know, I've found some strength back through these struggles, for me, parasport, and that, you know, you can do it too kind of thing. So I always have, you know, the keep going, keep growing kind of mentality that I've been able to latch on to since my accident.
We're joined by Brianna Hennessy, who is a para canoe and kayaker and also participates in wheelchair rugby. You're, of course, listening to The Neutral Zone on AMI Audio. I'm alongside Josh Watson and Cam Jenkins, and I am your host, Brock Richardson.
As we all know, as athletes, coaching is very important for us to succeed. And you've spoken very highly of your coach, Joel, and some of the sacrifices he's had to make. I'm wondering if you can talk to us a little bit about the relationship between you and Joel.
Ooh, that's another good one. the only individual sport I've ever done is boxing. And when I had my coach Luke in my corner, I always felt him there with me, riding with me. There was a very moving part for me when I was in Tokyo, because my personal coach you know, we're a dynamic duo, I guess. He actually got to come with me to Tokyo. It was very special for me, and I'm hoping that he can come with me to Paris as well. But he actually gave me this book called The Power of One. And there's a very moving line in it. And he would say it to me before my races, and he says it to me now. And it still gives me that feeling like he's there with me every breath that I take in and out, every stroke that I take. I feel his spirit with me. And what he does is he leans over and he's on one knee when I'm in my boat, and he puts his hand over my heart, and he says, first with the head and then with the heart. And that's our motto. I guess that's our secret team motto, that we have. And, you know, he's taught me everything I know, and every step of the way, you know, we seem to keep impressing people or blowing them away or blowing away expectations. It's my 2-year paddle anniversary this month. So I am the newest kid on the block. Most of my competitors have been doing it at least a decade. You know, without Joel, I would be nowhere. So it's the two of us that are rising together, I hope, for our country and hoping to medal in Paris in 2024.
So I think we're done with the Barbara Walters emotional questions now. So let's move on to some sports. Now, as you mentioned earlier, you did compete at the World Championships, and you came home with a gold and silver medal. Can you maybe talk a little bit about that experience and getting a gold and the silver?
Sure. So I got when I was at World Cup, I got a silver and a bronze. So a silver in para canoe, and then a bronze in para kayak. But the gold medalists weren't there. So I'm very competitive. So my competitive spirit was sort of driving to say, okay, well, when I go to World Championships, I want to get a real silver medal. And I had actually lost at World Cup to the Australian silver Tokyo medalist by 0.04 of a second, so 0.04 of a second. So that really, really fired me up coming into World Champs, that I really wanted to conquer that this time. And I was actually able. So I got a silver in para canoe, and I got a bronze in para kayak, and then I got the Pan Am Championships, so the Pan American Championships, or the week after, and I got a gold in para canoe, and then a silver in para kayak for that, as the two gold medals had gone back home, I guess, to their respective countries. But the point is that in my para canoe race, I was actually able to beat out the silver and bronze Tokyo podium medalists and knock them off their throne. So that was very huge for me. I can't tell you, I'm still in shock, and I can't believe our team pulled this off.
That's awesome.
Absolutely. Now, we're going to switch gears a little bit, because you are involved in another sport, and you're currently in Tampa, Florida, getting ready to compete in Division I wheelchair rugby. I understand there's some unique international import rules that you're able to take advantage of, and I wonder if you can talk to us a little bit about that.
Sure. So, you know, this is my U.S. family down here. I'm honored and privileged to be invited back for the third season to play with my boys down here. There's 44 teams in the U.S. league, and each team gets one international import. And I'm the only female in the entire league and entire world to be imported on a U.S. team. So there's you know, I take that very close to my heart. You know, in hoping to empower other women as well. There's only 4% of women that play this sport. It's called a co-ed league, but it's a male dominated sport. So, you know, I work hard to keep the boys in line down here. So that's that's my goal when I come down here.
What does it mean for you to be able to be a woman and be a role model and empower other women and girls growing up?
I mean, both my parents played in the National Football League for over a decade, and you know, I was always raised, you know, anything you put your mind to, you can do, and anything that a man can do, a woman can do too, you know, I was raised to have that in my heart, I guess. I played boys hockey until I was 14, until I switched over to girls hockey. So I guess it's kind of always been part of my nature, and maybe that's why I get along with the guys so well, is that I was kind of raised with you know, in that kind of culture of there's not really any gender roles. It's just, you know, everyone working really hard and having that same work ethic, and you know, girls can be as intense as guys, and I love my contact sports too. That's what I know. So, you know, for me, it's super powerful to be able to hopefully impact other women and you know, the next generation and other, you know, sort of some rising female stars, hopefully in this sport as well as, you know, we have a camp, we haven't had it since COVID, but in Houston, Texas once a year, it's an all women's camp. And we actually have the Women's World coming up in Paris the first week of December. So I'm really looking forward to be able to participate there. And we're trying to get as many women involved and participating as we can to keep growing the sport on the female side as well. So that's very, very important and close to my heart.
Awesome. Brianna, we really appreciate having you on. I know we started the first half of this interview with some hard-hitting questions. And I know as a producer of this program and putting it together, I told you by email, and I'll tell you on air that, you know, watching the YouTube video, I was moved to tears from one, you know, para sport athlete to another, to the point that we're literally going to continue this conversation after the break as a panel, just chatting about your story. And so we really appreciate you taking the time to do this, and loved having you on, and we hope to have you on again soon.
Thank you so very much. It means the world to me to, you know, when you guys take the time to give para athletes exposure, and you know, it's a lot harder to get our stories out there. So it means the world to me. Thank you so much. And I'll leave you with, you know, for your audience that, you know, I truly believe it's never too late to make your comeback in the world, no matter what your setbacks are.
Hear, hear to that completely. And loved having you on. Appreciate it very much. That was Brianna Hennessy, who was chatting with us about her career. And as I mentioned, we're going to continue the conversation because I made some notes and I want to go over them right after the break here on The Neutral Zone. Stay with us.
If you want to leave a message for the Neutral Zone, call now, 1-866-509-4545. And don't forget to give us permission to use your message on the air. Let's get ready to leave a voicemail!
Welcome back to The Neutral Zone right here on AMI Audio. I'm your host, Brock Richardson, alongside Cam Jenkins and Josh Watson. As we do time to time on this program, all of our interviews move us in one way or another. But sometimes you have interviews where you just think to yourself, we need to have a further conversation. And I feel that way about the interview we just did with Brianna. And I want to open the floor before I, you know, break this down into the specifics. Just general thoughts from both of you. What stuck out, and your thoughts, Cameron. Start with you, and then Josh.
Yeah, she talked about having a purpose, and it's so important to have a purpose in life. And it's great that she was able to find that purpose after her accident and, you know, prevail through that. And, you know, seeing her YouTube video and just how she spoke with us in the interview, you know, and I really hate to use the word inspirational when it comes to people with disabilities, but the way I see her is that I think she would be an absolute phenomenal public speaker, being able to motivate other people. So that's how I see Brianna, is as a motivational speaker or motivational person. And I think that she would end up being, obviously she's great as an athlete, but when she decides to kind of go on to the other side, either coaching or, you know, going to companies and being a motivational speaker, I can certainly see her doing that. Cause I'm just feeling uplifted after having that interview with her, and I'm ready to do another workout. I just did a workout before I got on the air here. So I'm ready to go a second round. So that's, you know, how motivational she is and how she talks and how she words things. And it's just absolutely great.
I really enjoyed that segment. I think she's very well spoken, and I loved the message that she brought with her. And of course, we're going to delve into some points from the interview here in a minute. But yeah, just overall, it was a great chance to talk to her. I've been following her Instagram for a while and have seen the success that she's had in some of her events recently. And I really hope she can take that into her rugby season and then back into canoe kayak when that starts up again.
You know, when you get to construct this program, as I do every week, there's certain times you have a little bit of a rapport with guests that you have. And most of the time you have rapport with all of them in different ways. But the thing that sort of kicked off the rapport between Brianna and I was when I said, after she had said, you know, thank you so much for, you know, giving the platform to para sport athletes. And I responded and I said, well, that's our goal here on the program. And from one Paralympic athlete to another, that's what we strive to do here on this program. And she immediately responded back with, oh, that's something to be celebrated. What sport? And then, of course, I told her bocce, as the audience knows here. And it just seemed to go from there. And she was so energetic to want to be part of the program. And we loved it. And she told me, I'll bring the energy. And, I responded, I'll bring the questions at some point.
Which some did, point, the hard-hitting Barbara Walters questions. What are you doing trying to make our people cry on the air, Brock?
I know. I'm sorry, Brianna. That just hard. But I was so moved by the YouTube video that I just thought that's what we should focus on during the interview. And if you want to go and look at the YouTube video, just Google Brianna Hennessy, and it'll actually, no, I lied. Don't Google it. YouTube it and put in Brianna Hennessy and then put Journey to Paris 2024, and it will pop up there as well. And I'll put it on our social media pages when the program is over, and so that it'll be easier to find. There was a couple of points that I wanted to hit on in this segment. Number one is the importance of coaching. She spoke about Joel, her coach, very, very well. And I think that's the thing as athletes we can take for granted. We can sort of say, oh, a coach is a coach is a coach. And that's not true. A coach becomes your family. They become part of your DNA. They become part of your fabric. They root for you as much as you root for yourself, and you root for them, and you win as a tandem, you lose as a tandem, all of those things. And for me, coaching was always important. And one of the topics we're going to get into in a future episode, at least more in depth, is my relationship with my father as provincial and national team player, and the impact that had on me, how it's different today than it was back then, because boy, oh boy, is it different today than before. Guys, thoughts on coaching and the importance of coaching? Josh, start with you.
I should have guessed that you were going to go first with me. Coaches are critical. Coaches are the people that build you up when you're down. They bring you down when maybe you're a bit too high, and they bring that knowledge and that skill that you need to learn in order to succeed at what you do. And the longer that you are in a coaching relationship, I think the stronger it gets. You become friends, and you just, as you said, they almost become like a part of your family, because you spend so much time in their presence and learning and growing with them over time. It's critically important to have great coaching around you if you want to succeed in your chosen sport.
Yeah, you have to have absolute trust in your coach, and your coach has to absolutely trust you. So with that coach and relationship, it's all about trust. And I know, you know, from my experience, one of the good coaches that I had from the Cruiser Sports, Ken Hall, as Josh was saying, there'd be times, and more often than not, there'd be times where, you know, he'd have to boost me up because my confidence was kind of wavering, and he'd send me an email and, you know, he'd say all, you know, good things about me, or all the great things about me when I was playing goal. And that would just kind of hype me up to be able to, you know, play in the tournaments. And, you know, I was good at the, in tournaments, I was a good goalie tournament player. So, but there's that trust where you have to be able to let the coach know how you're feeling. And even if it's personal or professional, just kind of stuff what's going on, because then they're able to better emotionally help you. And I think that's what a lot of coaching is not just, you know, how to throw the discus or, you know, to the shot put or exercising. A lot of it, I think, you know, when you're a player, is mental as well. So you've got to be in that right mental space. And I think that's the most important part of a coach, you know, is mentally and your mental health.
Coaches also know when to push you and when to kind of have that heart-to-heart conversation with you. I think I've had situations also with Ken, and there's just a way of knowing your player and knowing, okay, right now is not the time to maybe go at them and try and tell them everything that they need to improve on. Right now is okay. Let's focus on the positive. Let's focus on, we did this well and we did that well. The flight of that implement was good, or the push that you got with that shot put throw was right. So it's a fine balance, and good coaches really do know how to manage that.
I agree. And the conversations that I loved so much from all of my coaches were the ones that they would pull me off the bocce court during a practice. And they'd say either good things or things to improve on. And it was just that time that they took to literally, whether it was physically or not, but to put their hand on your shoulder and sort of give you that squeeze of like, you're doing a good job. Don't feel this way, feel that way, change this, change that. And the relationship can become so deep that you almost at times feel like when you win, they win too. And it works the other way as well. It works the way of like, when you lose, you guys also lose as a tandem, as we mentioned earlier. And that I found was the toughest part, was like feeling like you let your coaching staff down, and they worked so hard and doing all these things for you and preparing you and doing what you needed to do. And that was the toughest part. But those conversations following the feeling of letting them down were the most important, because they said, you know how to play this game. You know how to canoe, kayak, whatever the sport is that you do. Believe in yourself and you'll be able to move forward. And I really got that sense from Brianna today, which was really great to hear. The next point that I want to bring up is the family. And family could almost go before coaching, but it's my second point on the list. she didn't talk about it a lot in the interview, but she did. She does talk about it in the YouTube video. Just thoughts on family and the importance of having family, Cameron.
It's so important because I think that's your first line of defense as far as, you know, your parents to be able to either give you some confidence or positive reinforcement, or also to kick you in the butt if you need that as well. So like parents, they're a lot like a coach in a lot of ways too. But they know you probably a lot more, I'll say intimately, and that might be the wrong word to use, but they know you because, you know, my parents have known me for 48 years, going on 49 years. So they know a lot of my chamisms and, you know, everything that goes along with me. So family is so important to be able to be there, to be your cheerleader, but also to kick you in the A double dollar signs if you need that too.
Love that catch.
I totally agree with you, Cameron. I have been very, very blessed to have some wonderful parents and siblings and siblings that have played sports and have done some other things, but definitely had parents that have been very, very supportive. They will always, within reason, always come out and support me when they can. They'll drive to London for our annual sledge hockey tournament there and spend an entire day in a cold arena when my team might be getting their backsides handed to them. And they'll still be in the stand cheering every save and every good play that happens. And not just for me, but for everybody on the team.
Yep, your dad's certainly done that for me a lot of times for field practice or just in field as well.
Absolutely. He has done some coaching in his time, and he's definitely an A-plus cheerleader. He is the one who I can come off the field, and he'll give me pointers, sometimes a little too quickly, but he'll always have pointers on how I can improve and what I can do differently. And then there's my mom, who will listen quietly, look at me, and just know without me saying anything that, okay, that's enough coaching for now. Let him relax and do what he needs to do. But they're also, as supportive as they are, they also know when I need that kick in the rear, as you said, Cameron. And you can't change that. You can't succeed without it. And I think parents are your first coaches, whether it's learning to walk, learning to ride a bike, learning your first sport. Your parents are always the ones there that kind of guide you off the ground and then into the capable hands of the coaches that you then grow up with. So,
yeah, and I like how you said that, Josh. Yeah, I like how you said that, Josh, that your parents are your first coaches, and that's so true because at the end of the day, coaches come and go, but parents are forever.
Couldn't agree more. And I'll be honest with you, Josh, I have seen your father at multiple events. And sometimes he gets up before you're off the field or ice surface and gives you that feedback. And so, I've been there, done that, got the postcard with that. It's just, family is just so important. And again, we're going to do this topic a little bit more in depth and focusing on family and parasports and all these things in the coming weeks when we switch to a video podcast. So once again, I'd like to thank Brianna for joining us today on the program and really opening up in her story and what she has been able to accomplish. And being in the United States, Tampa, Florida, would be a fun place to be as she is now. So wish her all the luck in the world for this weekend, and we will have her on down the line again. Coming up after the break, we're going to switch gears into the mainstream sports world. Stay tuned for that conversation next on The Neutral Zone. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Neutral Zone here on AMI Audio. I'm your host, Brock Richardson, alongside Josh Watson and Cam Jenkins. And I had two things to talk about, and one of them won out. And so we're going to chat first about the Toronto Blue Jays. I would like to start this conversation by saying that when Yusei Kikuchi came back from his injury, everybody thought, okay, he's fixed. He's done well. He's all is well. This is going to be great. His first start was against the Baltimore Orioles. Pitched well. Everyone thought, okay, let's take a deep breath. Let's do this. Then he came back for his second start, and I don't recall who the opponent was for the second start, but I know that he did not pitch very well at all, and it's coming back to me now as I'm saying this. It was against the Cleveland Guardians. And then we learned recently that he went into the bullpen, and he pitched yesterday in a 9-1 lead, and I sent a hold your breath emoji to two people. One person was my mother, who is a big Blue Jay fan. The other one was one Josh Watson. And Josh's response to me was, "You and me both, buddy." That's what he said. "You and me both." And he had a bit of a shaky start and then worked himself out of it and walked off the field with his team. Having said all of this, Cameron, what do you say about Yusei Kikuchi? Because you can get pretty heated on various topics, aka Charlie Montoyo. So I'm curious to know what you say about...
Are you trying
about
to rile me up here, Brock? Are you trying to rile
always,
me up?
Always, always, always,
always. Kikuchi, he needs to go to the bullpen and stay there. And he needs to be in games where the leads are... 9-1 or 6-1, because that's, you know, if he gives up a couple of runs, then that's okay, because the lead is so much that it's not really going to matter. If they could buy him out or trade him, they should absolutely do that. However, there's still way too much money on his contract to be able to buy him out or to, you know, send him down to the minors. And even in the bullpen, I think he's making, what, 10 or 12 million a year? That's an expensive bullpen arm to try to figure things out, too. So I don't know. Like, I just think that, you know, I don't know all the ins and outs of baseball, but, you know, Rogers should act like MLSE sometimes and just bury him in the minors and go get somebody else to replace him and spend a bit more money, because he's certainly not doing it. And thank God for Stripling. He came in and he pitched a gem, and he's going to take Kikuchi's spot in the lineup. And, you know, hopefully Stripling does he can't do much worse than Kikuchi has. So, you know, thank God for Stripling. And that gives the other arm a chance to go to the bullpen as well. I forget his name, but the guy that came over from the Los Angeles Dodgers, the pitcher, put him
Mitch
in the bullpen too. Yeah, White. So put him in the bullpen too. And yeah, hopefully things are get a little bit better, because they certainly need to, because the Jays are falling again, going through another hiccup of quite a few games losing. So, you know, They need to pick it up. They need to be the championship team that they thought they were at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you there. It's been very, very frustrating to watch Kikuchi as a starting pitcher. He seems to either fall in love with a certain pitch that just isn't working for him, or he just gets himself into these jams that he cannot work himself out of. And as they said on the broadcast the other night, the Blue Jays can't afford to be going down 4 to 5 runs in the first few innings of a game every fifth day. It's just not the way to win baseball games. And the Blue Jays have said all year that this is the year. This is the movie, if you quote Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And as I joked with Brock and probably you as well, Cameron, earlier, if this is the movie, it's not a very good one.
It's the Titanic right about now.
Exactly. So something has to give. And unfortunately, that means that Stripling has to come into the rotation, and so does White, because Mitch White is actually going to replace either Ryu or Kikuchi. So they're both going to be in the starting rotation, at least for now. And we're going to have to see how August and September play out.
Yeah. What I will say about this, and you guys alluded to this, well, Josh, you just said it, that, you know, you can't be going down by, you know, 5-6 runs and then expecting this talented team to come back from that. But then on the flip side of that, you cannot expect this team to come out in the first inning and score that amount of runs to protect your pitcher. If they give you 1, 2, 3 runs over the span of 4 or 5 innings, that should be enough for this bullpen. And I understand that I'm talking about the major leagues, and these are teams that are good as well. But the truth of the matter is, if this team is truly as talented as everybody claims they are, they need to prove it. And when they have the lead, they cannot give it up. So I really hope to see a good series against the New York Yankees this weekend. They've already taken one game. I would be pretty well satisfied with the split. I'd like to get 3 games, but we will see. I think we need to see this team score runs, and it is as simple as that. Having said that, this is a bittersweet day for us on the Neutral Zone. It is our second to last episode on AMI Audio, and what that also means is that Matt Agnew is teching our program for his last time, as he will not join us next week. And I just want to say that Matt has been with us for the better part of the last 5 years in various capacities. Sometimes it was Sam, and then, you know, taken over from Nick, and then Sam had it, and then Matt came back, and then someone else took it for a while, and Matt came back. But all in all, Matt's been around for the better part of this whole time. And I personally have had a wonderful, wonderful relationship with Matt. Matt has helped me, fine tune my podcast descriptions, fine tune my writing, fine tune my hosting abilities, all those things. So from me, Matt, thank you very much for all that you've done for our program. We really, really appreciate it. And Cam, as the next long serving member of this panel, I'll give you the floor.
Yeah, absolutely. Matt, he has been phenomenal. He's the consummate professional. Even today, when I was having mic troubles, he's right there and kind of in my computer. I don't know how he gets in my computer so quick, but he gets in my computer and just fixes everything, and also gives tips and tricks. So Matt, has been an absolute pleasure working with you, and thanks for all that you've done to make this program that it is today.
I think that what has been said is completely accurate. You've managed to take at least 2 guys, maybe more, who have little to no broadcasting experience, and make us sound as if we know what we're doing, and make us sound the best that we can. And so for that, I am grateful. It is going to be different moving to YouTube, and I know we're in good hands with that. But it is a bit of a strange day. So thank you very much, Matt, for everything you do to keep us on the air and keep us sounding good. And I'm sure we are going to pass cross paths again. And thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah. And I told Matt via email that he will have his fingerprints all over this program for whatever length of time we get blessed to be able to continue to do this program. Matt will have his fingerprints. And one of my favorite memories of Matt, as we did on our anniversary episode, was the story about Brett Will's eyeballs being like dinner plates. That was my first experience to a remote, and it is still ingrained in my mind what Brett look like that date with what Matt has told me. So again, Matt, thank you so much. And with that, we are going to next week have our new technical producer, Mark Afalo, who you would be familiar with on Double Tap Canada on both the TV and audio side. He has the unruly task of making us look good on camera and not just sound good every week.
That's not going to happen.
So we'll see what Mark's magic is next week, but that is the task he has. With that, that is the end of our program. I'd like to thank Josh Watson, Cam Jenkins. I'd also like to thank our fine technical producer, Matt Agnew. Our technical supervisor is Paula Deneen, and our manager of AMI Audio is Andy Frank. Tune in next week because it is the last episode on AMI Audio. We have a jam-packed show for you next week. Stay safe and be well, and we'll talk to you then.